again. I thought I would do like a November or December episode, but I had this surgery in November and it just kind of put me out for a little bit, but I'm back now again. And I have, I always say my guests are special, but like this person, this is like her third appearance on my show. So welcome back, Leslie Gray Streeter.
Woohoo! I think this and 60 Songs That Explain the 90s are the shows that I've been on the most.
Yeah.
And I always, and it's, I'm a pop culture girl, so I always love that stuff. So I could obviously talk about this forever. So
I am so honored to have you on my show. I was telling one of my coworkers that you were going to be on there. I'm like, I feel like I'm special. Like, she keeps coming back.
You are. Just, you know, people always say, oh, it's such an honor just to be nominated or just to be asked. But it is, though, because after all, there's so many things. Everyone has podcasts these days.
Yeah.
And there's so, and also everyone's busy and, you know, stuff is happening in the world. And so for people to say, you're someone I want to come back on my show, the hour I spent with you is not a waste. That's shocking.
Oh, I'm honored to have you. Like, you are the best.
Oh, gosh. Thank you.
I love just like following you and stuff. It's like, you're one of the few reasons that I'm still on Twitter. Like, I don't really post on there.
It's a struggle. It is a struggle every day to stay there. When, like today, I literally had a conversation with someone who is trying to convince me that Nikki Haley truly meant it when she took the Confederate flag down, even though she's literally yesterday going, well, it's a both sides issue. I didn't want to pick a side. It's like, she's not picking a side. So every once in a while, I'm like, y'all are just trying to drive people crazy and I don't want to do it. But I continue to have information. You have to try harder to make sure that it's the right information or accurate information, but there's still people who are kind of shining through the void on there, which is why I'm still there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you and a few other people who haven't moved to Threads yet. I'm mostly on Threads now. I'm like slowly building up on there.
Yeah, I am slowly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the engagement yet that Twitter /X does, but it's getting there.
It's getting better. Yeah.
It's getting better. I have to remember sometimes to post. So I try to just sometimes if I'm posting stories or Colin, try to post on Threads first. So I don't forget to post to Threads. So yes.
Okay. So give us like an update. Like, you know, what have you been up to since last time you've been here?
Well, it's been a while. Let's see. Still writing for the Baltimore Banner. I still have a child. He is now in fourth grade. He is very old. Right now I'm currently fighting a cold and the science stuff and found like a car starting, or like Sam Shepard's car in the beginning of the Pelican Brief right before it blows up. Anyway, that's terrible. Sorry, Sam Shepard. Anyway, so RIP Sam Shepard and his character. So anyway, I'm doing pretty good. I finished my first novel. We're shopping it and hoping that goes somewhere. I have an event in Florida where I don't go a lot anymore, but in February, where I'll be in conversation with James Patterson. Okay. We had done that actually 4 years ago, almost to the day, when my book came out, Black Widow, in 2020, and then literally 2 weeks later, the world shut down. So now he has a book coming out, and so I will be returning the favor doing that. So that's what I have going on. I've got some other author events and stuff during which I will all be masked because y'all can't pay me to get COVID. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
So, and once again, that nobody wants that. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants that. But, otherwise things are good. You know, we're coming to a potentially scary news year, but you know, I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that we're gonna, you know, do some stuff, you know, that does not pretend the death of democracy and things like that. So, and people listening going, where's the quirky pop? Why are we talking about this?
We're gonna get there. I have to like to see how you're doing. Like, it would just be weird, but like, let's get into the episode.
Exactly. So that's. So that's where I am. I'm sitting here. Katrina can see me. I'm drinking this pineapple Waterloo, which is delicious. I love a sparkly soda, a sparkly water. It's very good.
Okay.
I'm just kind of chilling. Yeah. How are you feeling?
Me? I'm feeling better. So, like, I don't mind sharing. Like, I had been dealing with, like, apparently I had fibroids on my uterus. And I had been dealing with this for years where, like, I would have, okay, but, like, the worst periods ever.
Oh, no.
And I had, just last year alone, I had 4 different iron infusions because my iron was so low. I had spent so much money on different tests and stuff. And then finally they were like, oh, why don't you go to your gynecologist? And they found the fibroids. 2 months before the surgery, I was put on the worst medicine. Well, the medicine helped before the surgery, but it messed with, like, my mental health and my physical health.
Oh, Katrina.
All the things that, like, in those commercials where the people are, like, dancing around where they're like, this may cause this and that. I got all of that.
No.
And I felt like, oh my gosh, like all these years in therapy, it feels like it's like gone out the window. I had like the worst anxiety, but thankfully I had people that I could kind of reach out to. First a nurse was like, oh, that sounds like a you thing. She didn't say it sounds like a you thing, but professionally she made it seem like it was like all in my head. It had nothing to do with the medication, but I looked it up. And I was able to see, like, no, this is probably why you're experiencing that. But yeah, I got through it, thankfully, because I had people there for me. But I feel like if I didn't have the tools to work through that and, like, understand what's going on and stuff, what could have happened to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I got through it. I was still able to work and stuff, but, like, at night, I'm just like, oh my God. But yeah, I'm a lot better now and I'm feeling a lot better. I'm getting more energy. So I'm hoping like this year, no more procedures, no more iron infusions. It's feeling like that. So I'm
good. Hoping. Well, we're going to send good thoughts and cross.
So I wanted to ask you, like, I know you sometimes talk about dating and like, it seems like you've been getting stuck with a lot of like not so good guys. Like, how is that going?
Well, I don't even know what to call it, but I have a friend, a guy that I see semi-frequently who was very nice, who I don't know if he'll listen to the show, so I can say it. I'm not sure where this is going, but he's very nice.
Okay.
And we have a really good time together. He's also he's a dad, and we, you know, have lunch and laugh a lot. So you know, dating remains horrible, and I mm-hmm. he's a nice person, but basically there's this weirdness going on in the world. Well, there's so much weirdness going on in the world, but there's this whole like traditional wife thing that's happening where you have all these people going, I'm a trad wife and you should just let your husband work and whatever. It's like, which is, I roll my eyes, because for those of us who didn't get married young, and I was married for a while, but I got married in my late 30s, and I, you know, when my husband died, I was happy to have my own stuff, because mm-hmm. you know, they don't want women to have any power. And then so then you have guys like the incels, and then you have the guys who are like, stop dating when you're 35 because no one cares. And literally a guy who kept writing me yesterday going, that's not true. Who said that when the people don't want to hear about women's sexuality after 40? I'm like, have you been in this world? Yeah. And he's like, well, I've never heard this with my friends. It's like, but you're not a woman. And also you're lying to me. And I would say, what about this? You go, well, okay, that, but what about this? It's like, you know, I'm not having this argument. That's stupid. Mm-hmm. So, because we know that things are stacked against women, and even though women get to make their own decisions, you can't date someone who doesn't want to date you, you know? But I think that if we come together and say, maybe it's better to be single until we find somebody who's going to act right, I think that to me is the better response.
Yeah.
To say, you know what? Eh! Yes, yeah. That's where I am.
Yeah, I totally get that. Like, I don't know. It almost feels like it's like people are trying to return back to like the Tudor age where, like, a man, everything is the woman's fault. Like,
always.
I think about that often, like, just how this dude was able to be like, this wife didn't work out because God didn't want me to be with her. And they're like, okay. And they're like, well, she cheated on me, so I cut off her head. And then, you know, then another wife is like, oh, well, she cheated on me too, so I cut off her head. And it's just like, what woman would be like,
did she know?
Like, did she?
Or it is, because after two, you're like, wait a minute.
Like, nobody questioned him. No, I was like.
Well, because he established himself as the head of the church. He said, first of all, Catholicism won't allow me to marry again, so I'll go to this church. This church will, because I started it.
Right.
And they go, okay. I think that's so funny, and this is a whole different topic, but when we really look at, it took me a while to really, there are still people in 2023 who believe that the Windsor family and their cohort are selected by God to rule mm-hmm. England and other places, and that just that family, and that's the way all the cousins intermarried and they're all related in the different countries or whatever. It's crazy. Yeah. And that they do something dumb, you go, but they're fated by God. Maybe they're not. I don't know. It sounds crazy to me. But that we see, you know, Meghan Markle, mm-hmm. who, because she and her husband were like, yeah, so maybe we don't want to live in this place where we're being attacked, or where we have to, we do $1 million worth of renovations on this house with my wife's money, and now you kicked us out and whatever. And so the British tabloids were like, you'll have to beg to come back. And they're like, who?
Yeah.
Did y'all say something? Mm-hmm. Who is it? Because that's like, they're living their lives in California, baby. They're like, yeah. She's at the Beyonce concert twice. They're like, she looks miserable, but does she?
Yeah, it's really weird. I think social media being the way it is now, it's a lot harder for them to do the same tricks that they did 20, 30 years ago.
And that's why it's frustrating to them. That's why mm-hmm. they tell these lies. I love when they'll be like a fan. Like, there are people who were at the Beyonce concert in LA. She was there a couple nights, and they took a picture of Meghan and Harry and her mom in the box. And you saw the British tabloid people coming into fans' mentions and going, hi, this is so-and-so from the Daily Mail. Can I use your photo? They're like, nope. Can I use your video? No, you may not.
Mm-hmm.
But go with God. God bless you. I think it's hilarious. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't. It's definitely like racism that plays into it, at least I think, because it's just like, even if she's not like the best person, like, I don't think she did the amount of hate she did when they have a whole pedophile in the
family. Whole pedophile, ma'am.
That they never talk about.
Well, and that's that she showed up, because once again, this is the hierarchy, is that they were taught to believe that they truly don't get why nobody would want to be part of their club, because everyone literally dies to, you know, mm-hmm. be part of their club. So when someone joins their club and they say, we're going to treat you this way, and they go later for it, they don't get it. So when they're like, oh, well, you know, are they going to come back? No. Well, are they going to be part of this? No. Because why would they? It's like, you chase that. I said on Twitter the other day, it's like, oh no, how dare you leave when you told you to leave and then not come back? It's so terrible. Why would you do that?
Or
it's all your
like,
fault.
She better not come to this funeral. And then she doesn't come to the funeral. Oh, she's so disrespectful. She didn't come. And then when the queen died, she comes. And then they're like, oh, it's all about her. It's like, it doesn't matter what she does. It
doesn't matter what she does. So that's like, at that point, you're like, we're just going to stay where we are mm-hmm. and make money and do it. Lately, they had a headline that said she wasn't dropped by her agency. It's like, who said she was going to be? They mm-hmm. made it like she was going to be dropped, and they go, well, no, she wasn't. It's like, but no one ever said that but you. Or like this guy who's part of the British press, who's apparently close to Charles, who said something like, they need to get back on social media and let us know what they're doing. It's hard to find out where they are. It's like, that's the point, you morons. Because they truly believe, because the media is all set up by the monarchy in terms of access to the monarchs, so they're used to having that access, and they let them know when someone's going to be there and whatever. So they're like, why would we, in another country that we fled because people tried to kill us, why would we let you know where we are so then you can spin it? You'll just have to make shit up, pardon me, after we do it, and it's on you. Go mm-hmm. with God.
Yeah.
I release you, devil. Uh-huh. Get out. Yes.
Yeah. We're going to move on, but like it before moving, I wanted to ask, like, I think of this, like, you know how, like, when people say things like, you know, oh, my mama, like,
yes.
Wouldn't it be interesting if, like, someone from UK or even like Harry was like, I put that on Charles? Like, I'll put that on Charles. I don't know why.
People wouldn't understand what they were like, hey, what's happening?
Because there's been like these memes with X-Men where they'll have like the different X-Men like I put that on Charles like before he like starts like attacking people or something.
Oh,
like
that's
that.
Funny.
But he's talking about Charles Xavier, but
yes. Oh, that's funny. No, I haven't seen it. That's funny.
Anyway, what shows and films are you watching right now?
Oh my gosh, so much. I just watched a show called Good Grief on Netflix that is directed and starring and written by Dan Levy of Schitt's Creek, among other things, where he plays a widower who is married for about 5 minutes of the movie to Luke Evans. Mm-hmm. And he's living in England. He's American, living in England, married to this rich guy who's Luke Evans, who is an author, and he dies. And his friends, played by Himesh Patel and the beautiful Ruth Negga. And they're all messes in a way. Mm-hmm. And it's basically sort of like their secrets and stuff. And it's just, it's really beautiful. It's a really beautiful movie about grief. I'm a widow, so widow content is something that I'm like, yes, more of, please. I watched, last week I binged all of Dr. Death.
Oh
man, on Peacock. This is the second season. They've done documentaries and then now... and podcasts and now fictional stories following the careers of two specific doctors. This one is this guy who's been on several true crime podcasts and shows and stuff, who was a doctor named Paolo, who was Italian, who said that he had developed this like way to make like artificial tracheas, and that he was in a secret cabal of doctors that worked with the Pope and the Obamas, all that stuff, and it just turned out to none of it be true. All of it's terrible. What else did I watch? Oh, I started watching, I have not finished it. The show, there was I love documentaries about dumb people. It was called BitCon.
Okay.
It was about these guys who were basically dumbass dudes from Florida who had a allegedly prosperous exotic car rental company in South Florida, and then somehow stumbled on Bitcoin like everybody else did, and were just like, you have to watch it. Just the stuff that they made up is hilarious. It's terrible, and it's just that craze of several years ago where people just jumped on everything that sounded like a good thing without really understanding there was no verification because the stuff was so new.
Yeah.
And they knew, like, if we make up a guy who's supposedly our CEO who does all these things and we build this resume around him and we say they literally said they all went to Harvard. Mm. I mean, just dumb. At the same time, they're doing other things. Like, how were you at Harvard? It's so dumb, but I enjoyed it.
I wanted to thank you because you were one of the people who recommended that I watch Poker Face.
Oh, it's so good.
With Natasha Lyonne. It is a really great show. Like, I think I'm going to do an episode about it. Like,
oh, it's so good.
Love it.
I love, and I think I've talked to you about this before, I love shows that create a universe. Mm-hmm. I love shows that in 8 episodes, 10 episodes, whatever it is, create not just this character who is incredibly flawed but charismatic and just balls to the wall who she is, couldn't be phony if she wanted to. She can't. She tells the truth about things. She she's a lie detector. And she has some scummy tendencies. She's great. And she winds up being basically Columbo roaming the country, evading people who are after her. And Natasha Lyonne is amazing, and the acting is so great, and I love that they have title cards all look like Columbo, you know, and it's very stylistic. I love Poker Face, and I love the really great, like, some really big guest stars.
Yes.
Which reminds you of Columbo, that they'd have like, oh, look, it's person who was, you know, it's Vincent Price. It's, you know, this person or that person. You're like, what? Jack Cassidy. It's all these people. It's Johnny Cash. And I love how many famous people are willing to play murderers.
Yeah. Like Judith Light.
Oh my God, she's so good. And Tim Meadows. Mm-hmm. I mean, that episode was like, what? And Cherry Jones. Those episodes with the like sort of like Hollywoody people reminded me very much of Columbo, because he dealt with so many people. I always wonder with Columbo, it's like, not once did some rich guy who went to jail talk to a friend and say, you know who got me? This guy, Columbo. We thought he was stupid, but he wasn't. Watch out for him, because I know, but the next person they go, well, he's obviously stupid. It's like, no, he's not. Talk to your rich friends. They'll tell you.
I think there's always this bit of arrogance with people who do those things.
Always.
So while a normal person would be like, huh, maybe I shouldn't. But it's like, well, I'm this person, so I'm going to be fine, you know?
And they always get to like the second or third interview and go, well, that was amusing before, Lieutenant. Mm-hmm. But now they'll go, Detective. You'll go, Lieutenant. They'll go, whatever. It's like, you're going down.
And, whenever like I'm under the weather now and my voice changes, I try to do Natasha's voice, like, hey, what are we gonna do? Like,
I love it.
I can't do it now, but like when I'm not feeling the best, I do her voice because I love it.
That's really good. That's really good.
But I don't know. I still mostly like rewatch stuff. I mean, I've been watching the new Doctor Who specials that have come out. But yeah, other than that, I'm mostly like rewatching the Golden Girls or doing stuff.
Well, there was a show that we're going to talk about today is something that I rewatch from time to time because it's just so
good. Let me get into that. Did you see that Dick Van Dyke birthday special that recently came out?
I recorded it, and that's the one thing I did not do before I spoke to you. And obviously we've talked about our mutual love for Dick Van Dyke. I just have not had the bandwidth for it in the last couple of days. I have a sinus thing and I just like taken some DayQuil or whatever and knocking myself out. So I have not yet, but I've been savoring it like fine cheese.
Yeah. So I started it. I got halfway through and I think like the first 20 minutes I was sitting there with like my hands on my face, like, oh my gosh, just like seeing him, how happy he was to be there, how he was still remembered some of the moves. It's like people were singing some of the songs from the different musicals and movies he's been in, and he's still there mentally, he's still there.
Really
great. And like his wife was sitting next to him, and it was really nice. Like I can't wait to finish the rest of it. Like I didn't have what is that called, Paramount Plus, but I got it. Because like they give you 7 days for free.
You just got it's day five. You just gotta go. You're not getting me like that. Yeah,
right. Because like I was gonna wait, and that was just the moment. I'm like, well, I need to see this, so I'm gonna watch Dick Van Dyke because we love him. Like so, and I think it was the first episode you did. We talked about Diagnosis Murder and our love for Dick Van Dyke as an actor and just the man.
Just a person who continues in his life to exhibit such goodwill, and the fact that I have not heard anything bad about him ever. I've never heard anyone go, he was a jerk on set, or he was terrible to me at the Walmart or whatever. Just no, I've never heard anything bad about him. It's all the people who love him, who talk about what a great person he was. I was watching part of Julie Andrews' tribute. I saw a bit of it where she talked about how she had just given birth. She had given birth like a month before she did Mary, that she was so impressed with his energy level and that he was so gracious of her, and that it was just watching this guy that he could do everything. He could play all these different characters and he could do all these dances, and he and the chimney sweeps are up there just doing it. Just a gracious person. She seems the same way, honestly. Same thing. I don't ever hear anything bad about Julie Andrews.
Yeah. That for sure. All right. So we are going to get into our topic of Monk. So I thought, because like there are people who watch and they don't necessarily know the whole topic a bit. So I'll just briefly talk about Monk. He is a former detective who he has OCD and but also has dealt with like a lot of trauma in his life as a kid, and then like he had finally met the love of his life, Trudy, but then she was taken from him with a car bomb.
Yep.
And that like put him out where he couldn't do anything for like 3 years. But then when the show's the consultant for the police department that he used to work for, and he's able to solve crimes because he's able to see things that other people don't see because of his OCD and his fear. So it's I kind of like those stories where it's like the things that everyone says is bad about you, like you can end up using it for good.
Absolutely. Like Poker Face, you know, this woman, you know, who isn't necessarily always on the up and up, and she's like a, you know, cocktail waitress, and like, you know, she cannot do a lot of stuff. Like people say, oh, you should gamble, and she's like, can't, because she's cow carding and it's kind of illegal. So absolutely. Yeah. Adrian Monk is so fascinating to me, played by Tony Shalhoub, because he upset, I think, a lot of the expectations of television shows that your lead character would always be someone that you could root for.
Yeah.
Because Monk is exhausting. I just watched an episode, which is on my top, my list, where he and his assistant Natalie are in a crematorium, and he's rearranging the cards because they don't fit. And she's like, you can't rearrange the cards. Like, literally, that's not whose ashes those are.
Yeah.
And he just, because it's not just that he's OCD, it's that he has not gotten to the point as a human being that his OCD does not override his sense of propriety or humanity. Yeah. So the fact that, like, yes, this would be an exhausting person to work with, to work for, to be the psychiatrist of, you know, he just doesn't have that social reason. I would imagine we would know now that he was somewhere clearly on the spectrum.
So I actually did an episode, a Monk episode, and my guest, as an adult, he found out that he was on the autism spectrum, and he was able to relate to the show on that level, and he said he felt like that Monk was probably like him on the autism spectrum. So, like, if you haven't listened to that episode, it's in season one. It was a really good episode. He had a lot of good things to say.
I'll have to listen. Monk is, he's always trying to get out of paying his assistants. He's not always a nice person. He is openly competitive with another patient of his psychiatrist about who's the best, who the person likes, the doctor likes the best.
Yeah.
But then there are moments. There's a moment in one of my favorite episodes, which is Mr. Monk Comes Home, where he has received word from his brother, Ambrose, that their dad, who left them when he was there very young, is coming home. And you see how it's played by John Turturro, who's brilliant in everything that he's in. Ambrose has his own issues that he stayed in that house for years because he's so sure the dad's going to come back. He hasn't disturbed anything in his office. And Monk, who does not have a lot of patience for people, has immense patience for Ambrose.
Yeah.
Because he loves him. And he is able, even though Ambrose is very frustrating, and I guess Monk probably doesn't maybe appreciate that as other people find he, it's how he finds Ambrose.
Yeah.
But and obviously there's unrelated murder that's happening, but there's so much going on, and they're such good actors, both of them. Tony Shalhoub and John Turturro, that they are able to telegraph this kind of broken relationship that also has a lot of affection, a lot of need, and they're basically stuck. Ambrose is stuck emotionally back where he was when his father left.
Yeah.
And Monk has moved on and gotten, to everyone's surprise, he had gotten married and whatever, and obviously like, so Trudy was killed, but Monk was on a different trajectory, and I think he looks at Ambrose and thinks, I could have been this person. You know, who's completely debilitated and completely unable to really kind of be part of society on a, at one point, the spoiler, the dad comes back when they've left the house because someone they thought had tried to kill Ambrose, and he leaves a note on the door. I came by, I wouldn't have stayed around either. I'm so sorry. He says, Ambrose, I'm glad you got, I'm proud of you for getting out of the house. And all Ambrose gets from that is, he's proud of me, you know? which is it's such beautiful performances. And when my episodes that I like tend to deal with, well, everything is about Monk's motivations. And as a widowed person, mm-hmm. years after the show was on the main show, connecting to the grief of it, because he's very much a man in grief.
Yeah.
And so I relate to that all the more. And we were talking about eventually the last movie that came on, Mr. Monk's Last Case, which is, spoiler, about suicidal ideation and depression, yeah. and about mm-hmm. grief, and about I've done everything I came to do, and I understand that me being me is painful to other people mm-hmm. who don't necessarily need me and my craziness in their house or in their lives. And but once again, something happens by someone connected to Trudy that he has to do it.
Yeah.
Because, and he comes to believe that this will be his last case because he's planning on not being around very long. It's really beautiful. That takes a turn at the end where it's like, that's cheesy, but it was really beautiful. I did appreciate it.
So yeah, you kind of went through like your favorite episodes. And
yes, I have a list.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead and name them.
Okay. And in no particular order, Mr. Monk, At Your Service.
Okay.
Which was the one starring Sean Astin yeah. as this terrible, terrible guy who had always, he'd lived next door to Natalie's parents mm-hmm. and had asked her out. And he was just this rich guy who was a jerk, and his parents die in a car accident. And the first episode is always him doing something. He shoots, the butler, who's a longtime butler, has been trying to write the police to say, listen, I think there's something wrong with yeah. this scenario with the parents dying. And it's just, it was funny because Natalie in the first go of the show was not my favorite. I really preferred Sharona.
Okay.
Played by Biddy Schramm, who was the first, his nurse. I didn't really like Julie at first, mostly because I just missed Sharona so much. But now, once again, as a single mother, watching this woman both parent a child and basically parent this man who she's just a personal assistant of is really compelling to me.
Yeah.
And it was a, do you know that episode?
The one
with Sean Astin?
Yeah. 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 Cause like, they're like, we're going to clean it the Monk way, even though he had like a different name.
Yes. Yes. It was great. Also, Mr. Monk in the Airplane, that's probably my favorite episode.
Okay.
Where we find that Monk has never flown. Well, he flew when he was little, but they asked him to leave. Sharona tricks him into going to New Jersey to visit her aunt. She mm-hmm. gets him to the airport to tell him, listen, she's not coming here. We're not picking her up. I'm going there, and either you can come with me or you can stay here by yourself for a week and I'll get coverage. And so he goes and he believes that a fellow passenger has killed his wife. And she has.
Right.
He has. And he is dating this woman who's a double for his wife, who looks just like the wife mm-hmm. and kills her, leaves her in the bathroom, hides her body. They get on the plane. And it's like, all, not only is Carl Reiner in it as the guy sitting next to Monk on the plane, but Brooke Adams, who is Tony, plays the agent who takes Monk's book deal back in the most recent Mr. Monk.
She's been a couple of episodes.
She's been on a couple episodes.
Yeah.
And she's always super frustrated with him. So she's mm-hmm. this woman who's a flight attendant who is like, oh, I got it. And he's just so irritating. But I like the episode because I like capsule episodes where literally it has to be solved. It's very Hitchcocky and has to be solved in the amount of time that we're on this plane, you know, mm-hmm. that we got to figure this out. And there's murders and deception, and there's an annoying kid in front of Monk going, Pete and repeat, we're on a boat. Who fell off? Repeat fell off. Who was left? Pete fell off. Who was left? Repeat. And he can't stop. He can't stop. And I'm like, wouldn't somebody make that child sit down?
Yeah.
But apparently not. You would think. I love that episode. Also, too, because like Columbo, particularly people who either knew him when he was really sharp or people who don't know him and just know he's this guy who's not even really a police officer underestimate him. Mm-hmm. But it's not like Columbo where you go, oh, he is sharp. I mean, Monk is sharp, but he's also Monk. So he always says he's the guy. Mm-hmm. Or she's the guy, which makes me laugh. Meaning they're the guilty person. Mr. Monk and the Birds and the Bees, which is one of my favorite episodes. And the bad guy is an actor named Vincent Francesca, who I couldn't remember his name, so I had to Google Fun Bobby.
Oh, on Friends?
Yes, he was Fun Bobby, yes. He plays a guy who, it's another Natalie episode, he plays a guy who has killed his wife for the insurance money, but he hires a guy to break into the house to say they're going to split the insurance money, but then he shoots the guy and then shoots the wife. But there is a photo of him on the pier meeting with the guy on a t-shirt that Natalie's daughter has made at the pier at the amusement park with her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. So he literally tries to break them up so she'll throw the shirt away and he can get the shirt and throw away the evidence before anybody sees it. It's so crazy. It's so crazy because it just, once again, the writing on that show was so good. And they were able, a lot of shows go, like some of the procedurals, I love me like a Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, Chicago whatever, Chicago Pizza Parlor, you know, Chicago Ice Rink, whatever it is. There's always those things, but they don't spend a lot of time making sure everything makes sense in an episode. Yeah. They go, and it's the same homeless guy you saw. It is. Don't worry about it. Of course it is. It's great, you know, or it's not, whatever. But on Monk, the there is always there. I mean, yes, it doesn't make any sense that this guy would happen to be the guy that was on the thing, but they make on the shirt, but they make it work. They make it seem plausible. I really enjoyed that one. Mr. Monk and the Rapper, which is Snoop Dogg.
Yes.
Oh my God. It just,
one of my favorites too.
It's so great because, you know, I will say caveat, I am not a fan so much of Snoop's cuddlier makeover in that when I was growing up in the 90s, I was a teenager and, I was in my early 20s. And so I know when he was calling people a bitch and a hoe, that was me. That was black women. And so many of those guys made their money representing black women, not just to the black community, but to the world as bitches and hoes. And it was a funny, it was a joke. And now that he gets to like be adorable, doesn't always sit with me. However, he's a good actor, you know, basically playing himself. But, you know, memories are long. And I think that people who are like, well, I don't know anything about that. It's okay when it's not you. Anyway, but I really like that episode.
Do you think that, like, in light of, like, recent events and just rumblings about certain people, like, do you wonder if, like, the writers, like, had, like, any notion of, like, what was going on? I'm, like specifically, like, with, like, Biggie Smalls and P. Diddy.
You know, I don't know. My understanding is that you see on Twitter X or whatever, the X Twitter, that so many people are like, I was on the set and I saw this happen, or everybody clowned this particular, you know, artist who said that Diddy was doing these things and nobody listened to them because they didn't like them, or so how many people around this person die, or how many people around these people's exes die or whatever, and everyone goes, what? So, yeah, I'm also somewhat of a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, weird stuff, but just like, is there a pattern?
Yeah.
And why? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think so many people knew. So many people are complicit in all those things because you can't. Things like that do take an almost organized organization to say, we're going to do these things and everyone else is going to confirm it. Like with Harvey Weinstein, where you had all of these actors, all these actresses in the 90s who had amazing careers and they all went away. And you find out that almost every one of them had a run-in with him. Ashley Judd and Julia Roman and all of these people, Mira Sorvino, and you go, oh, I wonder what happened to that actor. It was all him. It was all him. Yeah. It's crazy. And you look back and go, that makes sense. That makes sense because these people were on the cover of magazines and were starring in things and they just went bloop, 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 bloop because they were labeled difficult to work with. They were mm-hmm. labeled or just said, hey, don't hire this person. And everyone went to work with him. Miramax is making all the money. So, yeah. It's, when you go back to... And there is a point to this, like the cast of Monk or the cast of Psych, two shows from USA's glory days of original yeah. programming, where they often do reunion shows and that kind of thing. And because obviously the casts adore each other, love working with each other. And yeah. you go, that's gotta, for want of a better word, be kind of asshole repellent because people keep signing up. They could do anything. Mm-hmm. They all have other jobs.
Yeah.
So yeah. I appreciate that. I appreciate the ability. Also, it's nice nostalgically when you're a fan to go, I hope they liked each other. Even mm-hmm. if they weren't best friends, I hope they like each other. Mr. Monk in the End, which was the yes. last regular episode where it comes full circle and Monk finds that Trudy, his late wife, who's played by Melora Hardin, in flashbacks, had a daughter, and that her daughter's father had killed her. Mm-hmm. And the daughter, Molly, had been given up for adoption. And Monk, once again, is a person, he and Trudy didn't get to be married that long. They didn't get to have kids. They, you know, he sees both an opportunity to have a part of Trudy in his life while also not wanting to damage her, which is a very real thing. Once again, if you have any experience in trauma, and all mm-hmm. of us do, whether we've realized or self-actualized that or not, this idea that we love people enough to not like hurt them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful episode. Once again, it's an episode where, you know, Sharona comes back and there's a beautiful sense of wrapping up. And there's been obviously the most recent movie, but it's such a beautiful timeline of his growth. He's still a really frustrating person,
mm-hmm.
but Molly makes him more in tune with the part of humanity that Trudy saw.
Yeah.
And it works. It never seems unrealistic or just painted on at the last minute, you know, mm-hmm. because it's in the script. It says that.
Yeah.
Then we're doing this. So yeah, that all works. How about
Mr. Monk and the Rapper is definitely one. Mr. Monk and the Leper, just how he freaks out.
What's that one?
So that's when this an alleged leper hires him to like go in his house, and he has like this makeup and stuff on that makes him look really, you know, sick.
Oh no.
And like Mr. Monk freaks out because it's like he doesn't want to get in. He's like,
of course,
washing his hands over and over again. Just like so many funny things in that episode.
You
had
asked me a question in the preparation materials, which I thought was so fascinating about COVID. There yeah. is a part in the beginning, it's, you know, post, you know, it's still COVID, honestly. We're still in a pandemic. We're in that the second highest upswing of the pandemic. Don't be fooled, everyone. But anyway, so where they go through the airport because they're going to Molly's wedding and everybody wants a hand wipe,
mm-hmm.
which was like, oh, and I think that we all are Monk in a way that we were not before, where we're like,
yeah.
we are germ phobic. I literally had a conversation with my child who was at someone else's house. And I told the dad, if he takes his mask off, he has to come home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know it's probably a little obsessive, but everybody's sick right now. I can't play around,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that Monk's, yeah, he's paranoid and he's OCD and there's a lot of things, but he wasn't wrong about germs and he wasn't, you know, wrong about staying in your house
yeah,
and not talking to other people. I just thought that was such a beautiful note because once again, these people have all come to love him. but also now they understand him, I think, a little differently and a little better.
Yeah. Yeah, like, even with, like, and they did an episode about this with, like, the birthday cake, how, you know, you, the kid blows on the whole cake and then passes out pieces to everyone. And now I think about that, I'm just like, maybe we do a cupcake and you just right. blow on that.
I have to tell you, I have been to two different birthday parties in the last year where the kid sneezed on the birthday cake. And my son, Brooks, was like, let's not eat that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't blame you at all, which is why, you know, for babies, you know, they give them a little cupcake or a little mm-hmm. smash cake or whatever. So their germs and drool and stuff can all be on one cake. Also, yeah, I don't want to touch cake. I don't want to touch buffets unless I know the people, unless it's like my family mm-hmm. and everybody. Literally for Christmas, we all took a COVID test before we came in the house, mm-hmm. which doesn't mean that you don't have it. It just meant that you were negative that morning. You know, and you yeah. sort of, if you want to be around people, you have to make a gamble. And I think that's where we find our understanding of Monk, because Monk is a person who even pre-COVID had to make decisions every day. How much of myself do I want to expose to other people?
Yeah.
And what does that mean? And so he's just not wired to be careless with his safety or his germs or just his attention, to think that we all have become or should be more specific in how we conduct ourselves like that.
Okay. So how would you, so I think I put in your thing, I put on a scale of 1 to 5, where 5 is the absolute best, how many bottles of hand sanitizer would you give this movie?
5.
5? Okay.
5, because like I said, when you get to these shows like this or Psych or any sort of reunion where you, and like I said, USA does them very well, you want as much of the original cast as you can get. Mm-hmm. You want an emotional reason for them to be there, like the one of Psych. Do you watch Psych?
Yes, I did a Psych episode. Yeah,
they got together because Timothy Olmedson had a stroke and they wanted mm-hmm. to work with him and could be in bed for most of the movie. Mm-hmm. And they did that because they loved him and went to work, and they wanted him to have something to do.
Yeah, even the one before, like, he was, like, on the phone.
Yes, because he was recovering.
Yeah. Yes.
It was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And once again, these are people who clearly enjoy being together. So you want to have those emotional threads. You want to see the there. You want to see... you want it to be earned. You want the emotionalism to be earned, and it wasn't this. And like I said, you know, spoiler alert, something happens at the end where Monk sees things, but he comes to a resolution about his life and where it should be.
Yeah.
Having to do with Trudy and with Molly. And it didn't make me go, oh, come on. Which is shocking, because it was written that it could have been like, oh, come on, y'all. Yeah. But it's just, it was really beautiful. And it, like I said, it made sense. And it, as a writer, I get irritated with writing that does not earn the emotions that it's beating you in the head to do. You go, oh, and we're sad. It's like, are we sad?
Yeah.
What? But I think it earned it. What did you think of it?
I loved it as well. I think it was really good. Like, I like seeing everyone get back together. I think what you said earlier about Molly and Monk's relationship being believable. Mm-hmm.
And this time Molly is played by a recognizable actress, Caitlin Fitzgerald, who's most recently on Home Economics.
Okay.
Who was great. She was not the original actress who played Molly, but
I was thinking that it probably was. I didn't look it up, but yeah.
No.
Right.
But I saw her and go, this is a person you trust these people, you know, even mm-hmm. though she's not, Molly was only in one episode anyway, so.
Right.
But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. And I'm hoping that this is setting them up for doing it again.
That's what I hope too. So like, what were your favorite parts in the movie?
Once again, I see everything as griefy. There is a moment where, spoiler alert, you know, Monk, who was widowed, Molly's fiance dies right before they get married, or supposed to get married. Mm-hmm. And so he knows what that pain is like. He knows what that is. And he immediately says, I need to stick around long enough to be able to help her. And I like, there's a scene. One thing, and these actors who have never worked together sell you that they're family. That's really powerful. And that she asks him to come to New York with her. And he's like, you wouldn't want me to do that. He truly believes that. He truly believes that she wouldn't want him around. That was really difficult. James Purefoy, who I'm black, so I call everybody by the show they were on. Like, that's Rome. Look at Rome over there trying to kill people. Effing Rome. But he's delicious. He's just British, man. Just deliciously evil. And basically, Molly's fiance knows something. He works for this company that the guy's made billions, literally billions of dollars for. And he knows something is not on the up and up. So he literally, every year, he bungee jumps and he lengthens the cord. Mm-hmm. So when he jumps, he actually hits the ground.
Yeah.
Which is this scene on the bridge where Molly is not paying attention and she hears everybody running towards the edge of the bridge and she knows that something is wrong. It was like, oh, terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. But yeah, I thought it was really well done.
Yeah. I like the scene when Monk was with Dr. Bell and tells Adrian that he actually retired.
Yes.
But like he's still meeting with him and he loves him.
Yes.
And I'm like, so you guys are pretty much just friends now.
Pretty much just friends. But he knows that Adrian would not say, hey, let's just hang out as friends.
Yeah.
That's not the structure in which the relationship has grown. And he's just not that guy. But I love that, too, because it's a progression of time. And it's what you need. People have different ways of loving on different people based on what they need. Mm-hmm. And love is not, how you show love is not universal. How you show love is certainly not, like, one size fits all. So this guy, who in the beginning, Monk, was not interested in because his previous well-trusted psychiatrist had died. And Monk didn't trust anyone. He didn't trust this person. And Dr. Bell was incredible. And Hector Elizondo has retired from acting. Yes. And came back to do the show because he loves that character. Absolutely. My sister told me that.
Oh my God.
Once again, the goodwill, extend goodwill into the world, people, and then it comes back to you. Give a little love and it all comes back to you. Yes.
Yeah.
Do that.
I didn't know that. That's
yes,
a good fact.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm trying to think whether there are any other parts. When Trudy's able to stop Monk from ending his life in the end and seeing just the different people that he helped. Because it was so many. It was so many.
To find their murderers. And there's this young lady and he goes, I don't know you. And she said, I'm still in the morgue. And I bawled is that this woman's spirit is speaking to him and saying, you have helped all these people. Please help me. You are needed. You could not save us from being murdered, but you have found justice for these people. And now I want you to do for them what you've done for me, what you've done for them. And it just, once again, slightly cheesy. But really beautiful. And once again, it earned its moment. I cannot get over enough. Like, I hate Titanic. I hate Titanic a lot. And one of the reasons that I hate Titanic is that I do not believe that, here we go, that Jack and Rose's relationship, the way that it was written and performed, earned the epicness. So yes, if you're on the backdrop of a tragedy, everything's going to be heightened, including how you feel about somebody.
Yeah.
But I believe that if the boat hadn't sunk, they would have had sex. They would have gotten off the boat. She either would have gone off and married Billy Zane, who was terrible anyway, or she would have gone with Jack for a little bit, realized she didn't like being, and come home. There's my favorite scene. I hate that movie, but my favorite scene is when Frances Fisher, who's a realist, who's her mother, says, listen, I married your dad for love. He had no money. We lost everything. So you like all our stuff. You like taking trips. You like your hat. Big old hat. Do you want to give it all up and have me take in washing for us to live? Is that what you want to do? And she's like, it's not fair. And she's like, no, it's not, but that's what women have to go through. And I was like, that's right. Because at that moment, if Rose had said, you're a right mother, let's do, I'm just not going to marry him, and I'm going to get off the boat pre-iceberg, and you can come with us, or good luck to you, you know, not be married to a rich guy. Have you watched The Buccaneers?
No.
Oh, on Apple TV.
Okay.
Which is based on the unfinished novel by Edith Wharton, which is about what they call the Dollar Princesses. It's about the Gilded Age era young women who married the guys in England who had castles and stuff and titles but no money. Mm-hmm. And these people who had not as much respectability or prospects, but they had money. And so it's about these women, young women who were taken to England. So basically there's a point in which one of the characters has the opportunity to marry a duke at the same time that her American parents' marriage is exploding. And her mother, like much like Rose, it's like, I have options as the mother of a duchess that I wouldn't have had back in New York. So and she wasn't pressuring her to marry him. She really thought for a while that the daughter loved this guy, but she was like, I don't have to stay with my terrible cheating husband. There were so many, we know that there were so many families whose money and livelihood was secured by marriage. I mean, that was a real thing, but I think like Titanic, I just didn't get the feeling that this was something that was going to last. And it didn't, because, you know, she could have gave him some space on that door, man. He's sitting there.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll never let go. But you did. You did let go, Jack. You let go. So.
I've seen Kiki Palmer's rant about
yes. that. And she's right.
Very much so. But yeah, like with the attention, I do like how they handle suicide. Like they had like the trigger warning at the beginning, put the 988 number.
Yes.
Well, it's like a text that you call. So like in my day job, one of the things that I do is I teach mental health first aid. Teach people how to look for signs and symptoms of someone who's not necessarily suicide, but just like having just like a hard time. And
sure.
Appropriate things to say and not using stigmatizing language and stuff. Mm-hmm. So they can get the help that they need.
That's amazing.
So I really appreciate that. And I know like some people will look at that episode and be like, you know, and just think logically be like, you know, he had so much to live for and all those people loved him. How could he do this? And he's been in therapy all this time. It's just like, That's not how it works at all.
It is not how it works. That's not how brains work. It's not how emotions work.
Yeah.
It's not how chemistry works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was there anything or anyone that you felt was like missing from the movie?
Well, Sharona, you know.
Yeah.
They mention her because she's with Randy. Mm-hmm. Randy Disher of the Randy Disher Experience. And he is an experience. But I missed, I don't know where Biddy Schramm was, but she didn't participate, obviously. I missed her. But it made sense, you know. They didn't ignore her. They mentioned her. And I appreciate, once again, because part of why you come back to reunion shows and reboots or whatever is because you want the people you fell in love with to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been nice to see her. And Julie, too.
Yes.
Jason Gray Stanford, he had a show for a while, not a show, a podcast called the Randy Disher Podcast.
Oh, that's funny.
It would kind of like go through different episodes and stuff with like his co-host, and or they would like interview people from the show, and they interviewed the actress who played Julie, Natalie's daughter, on the show.
Yes.
And it was like just really warm, like just and he had just different people from the show. So like what you're saying is right. It's the same thing with Psych, because there's a Psych podcast that I watch with the actors who played Juliet and Lassie. They do a podcast together. And they talk about the show, and it's just like, and like some of my thoughts are like, oh wow, they're really corny, like real people. Because like,
I love that.
You think that. Like they're going to be like super Hollywood, like talk like a Kardashian or something. They're like real people. It's just like, oh, I guess I could talk to them.
You
like,
that's funny. Nice.
But I also, it would have been nice, but maybe it would have taken too much attention from the seriousness if like Kevin Dorfman, Monk's old neighbor who died, would have been in the number.
Yes.
Because like, it looks like he's still alive. So that would have been nice if they would have brought him back, because I know a lot of fans hated that he ended up dying in the show.
I hated it too. What's like the Mary character on Psych? I hated that. I hated that Mary died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes I have to think, which show was that on? I'll go, oh, there's a character. Because literally I was like, the alley sheet. Oh, no, that wasn't. That was Psych.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because I was trying to think, like, who's Mary? Mary, Mary. I'm thinking in my head, Mary Lightly on Psych. That's who you were thinking about.
Yes, okay, that's what I'm saying. I kept like, oh, it's Mary. And Mary was like Kevin Dorfman to me. It's like this like kind of weird guy.
Yeah.
You know, kind of.
I see the parallels.
Yes.
But I wish they would have did like some of their old bits, like when Monk would try to get Natalie to climb something, he'd be like, up you go. And then she'd look at him and go, up you go.
Yes.
That would have been nice to see. But I mean, those are little minor things, but I still gave the show like 5 hand sanitizers.
Fantastic. So. Yeah. We should all have 5 hand sanitizers at this point. As my son called it when he was little, hanitizer.
Hanitizer.
Yes.
So I want to kind of move into like the themes of the movie. So, you know, you've shared in your book, Black Widow, your experience with grief and the loss of your husband.
Mm-hmm.
How has your grief changed or stayed the same over the years?
I think grief has to change if we're going to grow. I mean, I still miss him. It's weird because it'll be 9 years this year. Which seems both impossible and completely appropriate. Because I look at the pictures. I mean, when you look at, like, when someone dies and you look at, I used to look at it as, like, in fashion. It's like, oh, no, they'll never get past that, you know, stage of fashion. They'll always be stuck in those, in that Ed Hardy shirt. But that our child is so old, much older. He was not quite 2 when Scott died. Now we live in a different place, and I have to think all the time, like, where would we live? Because I don't think he would want to. I live in Baltimore City. I live where we grew up, and I live in a different neighborhood. He would want to, if we moved from Florida, which would have been a argument, he wouldn't have wanted to live in the city, probably. He'd want to live in the county, someplace I would have hated. But then again, I don't know, because that's so long ago, and I'm not the same person that I was. And I cannot say that he would be the same person that he was, because, you know, you get older, you get wiser, jobs and things come up. And also COVID changed everything and everybody's idea about what they thought they were going to do and where they thought they were going to be. But I think that grief changes you because time changes you. Like I said, I could not exist in that debilitating first stage of grief where you cry all the time, you don't know what you're doing, you have to pull yourself together eventually, and not on anybody else's timeline, just on yours. He would be proud of the person that I am. He'd be proud of the person that Brooks is. He would be proud of how I, you know, didn't let it beat me, you know? And I've made something out of it, and I've written about things. Someone the other day posted on Facebook and Twitter with a picture. This book is now almost 4 years old. I love this book. Just random. And I was like, that someone I don't know went out of their way to find my book 4 years later and post about it. It wasn't a big hit. It's continued to find people. That's such a blessing.
Yeah, in preparation for the first time you were on the show, I read the book while I did like the audio version of it,
so. And that was me.
I can still hear you say different things. I think the one that sticks out for me is the one where you're at court and you're saying things and you're like talking to yourself like, is this
exactly.
I Yeah, like that still gets me. I'm just like, because I told you, like, I literally cried like several times reading that. I just really, I know, I haven't had like a loss that profound, and I know it's bound to happen one day. But like, I don't know. I guess I'm good, like empathizing, like. When someone like dies like online and I don't know, it'll be like, so you know, like Facebook will show like a post of someone else and they're like, rest in peace, so and so, and I'm looking at it and then like I go down a rabbit hole, I go to their face, and then I find their cousin, and I'm looking at this, I'm like, wow, how did I get here? And I'm like mourning for someone else.
Wow. But I love that you have that empathy. Yeah, I mean, people post on Facebook or Twitter or whatever and they talk about losses and things are important, and even if you don't know these people in real life, you're like, I read this person talking about their cat or talking about the kind of Cheetos they like or whatever, I should also be engaged when they talk about their cousin. So
so you know, when you look at the way Monk and Molly like dealt with their grief in the movie and on the show, some may say like Monk, you know, held on to his grief for too long. He didn't grow. Like, how would you respond to the notion that like grief is like on a timeline?
Well, the Monk in the first episode, in the first season, is not the Monk now.
Mm-hmm.
He has changed. He's still a person with a certain diagnosis and a certain ability to want to connect or not. But
yeah.
To say I love you to people and accept that from people, to want to get to know other people and invite people like Molly and her fiance into his life is not where he was, because he was a completely shut down person.
Mm-hmm.
And even the first couple episodes, they write Randy as such a jerk. Randy is so mean to Monk. They call him the defective detective. I mean, he's just terrible to him. And they soften the Randy Disher character and make him goofy and dumb or whatever. But I enjoy that there is a grace that is given that character, even when he doesn't always seem to earn it. So I would say that, first of all, people need to get off other people's case. Their grief is not linear.
Yeah.
Grief is not one size fits all. Grief is not, they talk about the stages. Those stages are not linear. Mm-hmm. You can be in one and go back to the other and go back to this and leap scotch, hopscotch. And you can, 8 years later, you think you've healed and something happens and briefly you're feeling those things. So yeah. I think that everyone has lost someone at some point, whether or not it's a spouse or a significant other. These things, and those in movies, because that's the most immediate ones. People go, oh no, I can't believe I would lose this person or whatever. I don't recommend it, but it's terrible. No stars, would not recommend widowhood ever.
Yeah.
But I will say that, yes, Monk was not just a person who lost his wife. Monk was a person, as you stated, who did not let people in, let this person in, and then he lost them. And so that's a reason never to let anybody else in again. Mm-hmm. And in the show, I think we mentioned it, part of what he wanted, because he had lost his badge, was that he wanted to be reinstated. And a lot of the things he does in the show are because he's trying to get back on the police force, because that's where he felt he had the most control. And he's a consultant for them, but a lot of times they go, well, where's your ID? He's snooping around someone's murder scene without the police. And they're like, so where's your ID? Who are you? What is this? And so having that badge gave him a sense of legitimacy, which is something that he wanted and respected. That's, you know, in his way, it's an order, you know, the law and the order part of the order. I think that people need to give such immense grace to grieving people.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, in the 20 years that the character's existed, that character has grown so much.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if it's like a Western society thing, but I just think that we don't like to have a full range of emotions. It's like,
no,
especially like you're either happy or you're just like mad. Like
we're allergic,
and yeah,
we're allergic to nuance. For the those of you who don't know, I do a podcast with my sister called Fine Beats and Cheeses, where we part of the overall premise is that it's pop culture that people think is cheesy or a guilty pleasure that you don't feel any guilt about. But I think it all comes back to this society which refuses to have nuance. It says, if you like that too much, it's weird, it's cringe. If you don't like that, it's terrible, or you're not seeing the, you don't like Titanic, so you're not seeing it the way I do, so you're terrible and you're not smart, or you don't feel, or whatever. And because it's easier not to have nuances, it's easier to be completely clueless about other people, because then you can dismiss them and move on.
Yeah.
And your space, it's Dirty Dancing Reverence. Your dance space is here. And that's where you are. It's a little box, and you can stay in that box, and anything that tries to get in the box better agree with you. If it doesn't, back out of the box.
Yeah. I feel like we've come away a ways in society, in our society, where we're starting to talk about these things, but there's still like a lot of pushback. Where
there is a lot of pushback.
It's like even like talking about, you know, like mental health, like mental health first aid, I could still see people like, oh, you know, they're weak. Like, just, you know, get over it. Pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You'll be fine.
When you have neither straps or boots.
Yeah.
I mean, you got nothing. Yeah. And it just, that to me shows such a shocking lack of, as you said, empathy and compassion. To say you have a clearly stated diagnosis, or even if you have a diagnosis, you have an issue, and to go, it makes me uncomfortable, so I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. So like, you kind of answered my next question about, you know, wanting to see, like, if you thought Monk could be a move, like another movie, kind of like the psych movies. You definitely think that, yeah.
Well, I think it sets it up. It sets it up. I mean, if not this young lady who sees him as her ghost or her spirit reverence says, please, I need you to help me. But he has renewed purpose. Even if it doesn't start again, you know that Monk will go on. You know, he did not die, but it sets it up for him to have a different purpose. I love it. I love the idea. Also, I love those characters. They feel like my family. I've got to know them and the psych characters. I've gotten to know them so well. I miss them.
Yeah. I'm waiting for the next psych movie. They keep, again, I listen to the what do they call it? The psychologists are in. And they talk about, yeah, like with the next movie. Nothing's been set in stone yet, but they're like, yeah, we're gonna do it.
That's fun. And
I hope they do end up doing another Monk movie. I mean, there's books out there, but just the way the storyline is now, it couldn't be exactly the way the books are, but they could still take aspects of it. Like, in some of the books, Monk goes to help Brandy in New Jersey for a little bit and solve cases.
Oh, cool.
And he gets a girlfriend.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like Monk with a girlfriend, so it's not like, you know.
Good point.
Like, make it out everywhere.
No,
like, it's very complicated.
That's funny. You'd have a lot of patience to date that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my goodness. And like, these movies just make so many people happy, and it makes them think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I feel
it
like
made me happy.
Yeah, it gives people, you know, a little bit of hope.
I like that.
Even though you're flawed, like, there's people out there like that can love you, like, you can find your people that'll accept you anyway.
Very important to have your people.
Yeah. So we're coming to the end. You mentioned your podcast, but like, mention it again. Tell us a little bit more about the podcast.
It's called Fine Beats and Cheeses, and I do it with my sister Lynn and our producer Sam. That we call Producer Sam, and we basically just talk about, we let the guests decide. We say, hey, I'd like you to be on my show. Can you talk, what do you want to talk about? And we've talked about everything from anime to fan fiction to one coming up next week is Designing Women. We've talked about comic books, and we've talked about reality television, so many of them. We talked about the Bachelor series, and You talked about Spinal Tap and Looney Tunes. And so we got some really cool stuff coming up. We got some really, like, bigger guests coming on that I'm like, I don't know how that happened.
Because you're awesome.
It's hilarious to me. We have some people that I've been hounding for a while, and some of them have... I can't wait to say, I'm not going to say, but people who have agreed, we'll see. Two of the bigger ones actually scheduled themselves today. I'm like, what? So, and it's all random. I don't care who you are. I don't have an agenda. It's like, just show up.
I know I was supposed to come on. You were. But I think something happened on your end, like life-wise.
It did. And I cannot remember what it is, but we have to have you on. We have to have you on.
Yeah, because... I think I said I wanted to talk about A Walk to Remember because people think it's really cool.
It was! Oh, we have to! It's so funny. So, look at Mandy Moore is in this Dr. Death show.
Oh, okay.
And it's so funny seeing how far she's come as an actor, because I thought her acting in the beginning was
Yeah.
But I think this is us the fact that she never was never even nominated for an Emmy when she held that show together.
Mm-hmm.
That she played this woman through 40, 50 years, you know, was insane to me. Rebecca, great show, great performance. Let's do that. That would be really fun.
Okay. Yeah. Just, you know, let me know. And I'll make sure I'll share it on my platforms and stuff.
Yay!
I've interacted with Lynn on X, but like I've never gotten to talk to her, so it'd be nice to get to talk
to her. She loves you. I said I was doing your show. She goes, I love her. So
maybe I'll have to have Lynn come on. See,
oh, like, she would love it. Oh, girl.
What shows she likes.
There's all kinds of things. Our favorite thing right now is it's been on forever. We booked together last week. She was here. We watched the Death in Paradise Christmas special.
Okay.
Do you know Death in Paradise?
I don't. But you're always giving me different ideas of
It's a BBC show.
Oh, okay.
It started with, there's like this fake country that's a former British colony, but still has, there's still the, it's colonial, I don't like it, but there's like a guy who's a British detective who comes to solve a murder in this Caribbean place, and he winds up staying, and then that character dies, and all the other people come, whatever, but... there's always a Christmas special because in England they love their Christmas specials. So we hadn't seen that it was on and everything got thrown off by the actor strike and everything. But she was at my house last week and I go, bloop, BritBox, right before I canceled it. And we're like, what? The theme goes, do, 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 do. It's very, you know, Caribbean, reggae, whatever. But it always, somebody dies. And then they start the do 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 do, and Lynn and her husband sing it. Somebody just died. Yes, they did. Oh, they're dead. Somebody has died. Yeah, it's so stupid, but because it's like that's awfully upbeat. But anyway, we enjoy it.
Okay, I may have to check that out. I don't have BBC America right now. I had gotten rid of it because they weren't showing Doctor Who at the time, new episodes, and now the new episodes are on Disney Plus. So I was like, I don't know this anymore.
Well, I just got rid of BritBox. That's what that was on. I there's shows that I will come back to on BritBox, but right now I don't need to pay for it. So I saw everything I need, so I'm good.
Okay. Yeah, and tell the listeners about like your book again. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Black Widow is my memoir that came out in 2020, right before lockdown. It's about the first year of my widowhood after my husband Scott died. And it's about adoption and loss and aging and health and race and religion and all kinds of stuff. And I it's funny because that happened like almost 9 years ago. And sometimes I read it and some parts of it are very painful. Parts feel like it happened to somebody else because it didn't, but it didn't, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy reading it. So I was like, oh, look at this. Look what I did. And it's insane to have written a book. I know people who do this like 3 books a year. I'm like, how do you eat? How do you I guess if you're being paid a lot of money exclusive to be an author, you can do that.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, that's true. And where can people find you and like tell us the name of like where you work?
I work at the Baltimore Banner, which is a digital publication in Baltimore. You can find me at the Baltimore Banner. You can find me on X. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on, I don't really do Blue Sky a lot. You can find me on Threads. You can find me on Fine Beats and Cheeses. I have a Substack I do absolutely nothing with, so don't do that. And I have to update LeslieGrayShooter.com mostly because I want to tell people where I'm going to be. And I have red hair now, so I want my photos to match my
and
stuff.
I love
so.
It.
Thank you.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And listeners, like I said, I mean, I'm sort of still on X, but I'm like mostly lurking. I'm posting more on Threads, but I'm posting just like under my name, Katrina T. Parker. I don't know if I'm going to get like a podcast page. It's just a lot of work. I still do the, my podcast page on Facebook. So Quirky Pop there and also Instagram. I know I'll get better at it. For those of you listening, if you're going to be in Los Angeles next month for the Doctor Who convention,
nice.
I'll be there again.
Yay!
And instead of just being on the panel, I'm actually doing this thing called a TARDIS talk, where it's kind of like an academic paper session, but it doesn't necessarily have to be like academics. You can talk about something within the world of Doctor Who for 10 to 15 minutes straight.
Y'all, listen to the show. I was so impressed when she was like, I'm going to do this. I mean, it seems like such a big deal. And it was so impressive. Like I said, I love people who have a thing they love. I love people who are truly experts at things that they love without being like weird or exclusionary or gatekeepy about it. Mm-hmm. And the joy that you have in that show, I was just so impressed. I'm like, you're going where? What are you doing? Yeah. You're on a panel.
Yeah.
Yes. No, like, that was amazing.
It was such a fun experience. I met some really great people that like, I still talk to now. Cause like,
that's great.
The session that I'm doing, it's called, I'm talking about ambiguous loss and the themes that have come up of ambiguous loss through Doctor Who and just trying to explain it, the different versions of it and stuff. And, I'm just like trying to make sure I'm making it understandable for everyone and it makes sense. So like, I've been working on that. I'm excited, a little bit nervous, but like mostly
you'll
excited.
Be that's amazing.
Yeah. And like one of my new friends that I met, like she's from Brazil, and she was like, Katrina, I saw on the website, like they had your name on the latest update.
I love it.
So this is exciting.
It's official. Yes.
Yeah, I'll be there for my birthday weekend. I think it's gonna be a nice time.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always fun to talk to you and to like dig deep into the stuff.
Yeah.
And to just be able to deal with other people going, why do you like that? That's weird. So
I've learned over years, like you don't yuck someone's yum.
Absolutely.
And if someone enjoys something and you don't enjoy it, let them enjoy it because life is hard and whatever you can use to help you get through
life is terrible. Yes.
Do it. So it's like my cat, she likes to watch Bluey with my kids. Like we watch Bluey, but like she knows when I come home for lunch, I'm probably gonna watch The Golden Girls. So she just sits next to me and watches me laugh at the same jokes over and over again because it I like it.
That reminds me, my child got a Bluey t-shirt for Christmas that he didn't necessarily want. So I looked at it and I said, can I have it? Because it actually fits me. So.
Oh.
Yes.
I mean, I am a part of an adult Bluey fan page. So.
Oh, it's Bluey and Bingo hugging each other.
It's a really good show. It's like for kids, but it's actually teaching and helping adults heal as well.
The fact that Bluey's parents are happy and they are romantic with each other and that the mother goes to a hockey league. Like the mother has her own life and the father is also involved in the active play imagination of his children. It's really great. It's a really great show.
Oh yeah. I have a crush on Bandit the dog.
Bandit's great.
Bandit's like, great. How can you have a crush on a cartoon dog? I can't
explain it. Cartoon dog. He's a good dad and a good husband. Stop judging people.
I'm not trying to mess with Chili, but I'm just like, that's a good man to have. Like,
yeah, oh, I love Chili. I love Chili. And I love that they have, like, dog names. They're not named, like, Robert and Stacy. They're named, like, mm-hmm. Bingo and Bandit and Bluey, and it's very funny.
Yeah. Good show.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for coming on there. Like, I really do appreciate you. Like, I've told people, like, I feel like you're kind of like the big sister I never had. So
stop it.
No, seriously. Because
like, I feel like you're just this incredibly cool, upbeat, positive person who just keeps showing up in my life. I'm like, I like that. There's such a lack of positivity in this world right now that to have someone who wants to make positivity a part of themselves, not like a brand, but just a part of what mm-hmm. they put out into the world is really beautiful. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I really, I mean, I'm not perfect. There are things that I get upset about, but like, I don't want to like always like put that out there, because it's just so much of that. And I'm trying to heal myself. I think I realize when I find myself like getting like super angry and judging stuff, it's just like, what's something you can work on with yourself? Like, you're focusing on everyone else. Why don't you focus on yourself a little?
With your own stuff, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Listeners, thank you for listening. And hopefully I should have like a recap for the Gallifrey 1 episode in February.